Mike Mimoso, editorial director of the security media group at TechTarget. What follows is a conversation I had with Kurt Romer, chief security strategist at Citrix Systems. Kurt is also the chair of the PCI Virtualization Special Interest Group. During our conversation, Kurt covers the work being done by the group on the upcoming virtualization security guidance, as well as other virtualization security issues that enterprises are dealing with during these early days of cloud computing.
So I know you're heavily involved with PCI.
Yes.
The three-year lag, I mean, what's your take on it? Do you think it was, in the end, it's going to be a good thing for...
Yeah, it is. It basically gets the standards more in alignment. And so as a merchant has to comply with PCI DSS as well as PA DSS potentially for payment apps, this gets everything into to much more alignment. And keep in mind that PCI is really, it's a baseline. It's a minimum set of standards for meeting requirements and reducing fraud in card environments. But a lot of people misinterpret that and think PCI is the be-all end-all. It's absolutely everything you have to do and you stop there. It is the minimum, and for a lot of other organizations, they may want to supplement it with additional risk reduction, and they're free to do that anytime within the three-year period.
Right.
Or outside of it, really doesn't matter.
I mean, were you hearing, though, from merchants that they need more time just to put the speed? It's just too in-depth a process.
The ramp has been significant, especially as some of the audit requirements change. And the three-year ramp now gets everybody much more in alignment so that they know what to expect, what to predict, and that their applications and other data security issues all tend to merge together a lot better than they have in the past.
Yeah.
And makes it easier, cheaper.
Mm-hmm. How involved are you with any upcoming guidance in terms of virtualization?
I'm on the board of advisors for PCI, and I chair the virtualization SIG. We just completed what we believe final revision of the information supplement for virtualization. DSS 2.0 specifically mentions virtualization. Virtualization was never excluded before.
Right.
It's just there were interpretations, and anytime something's open to interpretation, we really have to address it and make sure that we're providing more definitive guidance. So what the information supplement's going to do is it goes through and describes different payment type of environments that could utilize virtualization, what an architect would need to consider, what an auditor needs to look out for, and it's a pretty detailed white paper that's also complemented by a mapping tool that allows an auditor to go in and map requirements against specific virtualization technologies.
Mm-hmm. Can you talk a little bit about what's in the guidance? I mean, even if it's just at a high level.
it's really taking a look at what needs to be there for hypervisor and server-based hypervisor virtualization, one of the primary use cases. It's been out there for years, but what would somebody have to have in place for a firewall between virtual machines on a host, and how those would communicate. So we started at that level. We got into application and desktop virtualization and what would need to be in place to help ensure the integrity of cardholder data as it's traversing back and forth, and policies that you probably want to put in place to restrict the ability for somebody to cut, copy, or paste on a local workstation.
Right.
And, just keep the data in the data center. And then we did also tackle the notion of cloud computing, mixed mode, multi-tenant environments where you would have a shared environment like a public cloud that you could have a PCI environment sitting right next to some other unknown environment. And what level of control, what level of audit, what level of assurance would need to be in place so that you could utilize that, how to make a risk-based decision on that.
Mm-hmm.
When you look at it from a cloud perspective, you could take a smaller merchant and most likely move them into the cloud, and they wind up with a much better level of security and compliance than they would have had on site. Let's face it, it's very expensive to get the resources, the people, the space. management, moving them into the cloud is usually a very, very positive move for PCI. One thing that we want to be careful with, though, is you don't want a very large merchant to go, hey, here's a way to, you know, shave 0.002% of my cost, which is how many gazillion dollars per year, and therefore I'm just going to put this up and hope for the best.
Yeah.
Can't have that happen either.
I mean, any unique, I mean, obviously there's a lot of people out there that are already, you know, well into their virtualization plans, and you know, do you anticipate when this guidance comes out that there's going to be a lot of backtracking, and is there going to be any kind of revamp necessary?
No, not at all.
Considering, you know.
Yeah, it should be something that provides much more clarification, and because with the virtualization SIG, we have many of the leading QSAs, auditors, for PCI that have been developing this and tracking it along with us. They know what this guidance is going to be for over a year now, and they've been advising their customers, of course.
Right.
And this is going to make sure that you know, it's available for the general public. It's documenting not only what is going on from a best practice, but considerations for the future and rapidly evolving technology, what to look out for and what to say, hey, you know, I might want to wait, I might want to have a little bit more assurance before I slam this new thing in.
What's the discussion like with the QSAs and the SIG, when, you know, in terms of interpretation? It's always kind of like a bugaboo with assessments that, you know, there, some of them are, you know, really open to interpretation by the QSAs. What's the dialogue like?
You know, first and foremost, I really appreciate how the PCI Council's put this together, because in terms of the SIGs and the freedoms that we have, we're able to have those discussions. But we've also kept everything extremely vendor independent, and we don't let any one individual or party speak up and dominate the conversation. That's part of my responsibility as chairing this, to make sure that all sides are heard and considered and appropriately acted on. But if you have somebody who's taking an abusive stance towards a requirement, something that would benefit their business, make them more money, and, you know, they're reading it wrong, they're taking the intent and manipulating it, there are formal processes for reporting those individuals. We really haven't had that problem within the SIG. The problem that we've had is you have some people who are extremely risk-averse, and then you have others that are probably a lot more risk-tolerant. And the risk-tolerant folks are saying, oh my God, moving into this cloud is going to be incredible, because it's going to be so much easier for people to become compliant, to stay compliant, for us to monitor. And then the risk-averse people are going, I can't walk up and touch it. I can't walk into the data center. Fail. Chance of this ever being compliant. And we struggled with that, and that's part of the reason why this guidance has taken so long to come out. We had it available very early on at a high level. We had it available very specific guidance back around November. And then both Verizon Business and Amazon came out and said that their clouds are PCI compliant. We had to back up and say, there's some aspects of cloud that we have to get in this document. And the PCI Technical Working Group encouraged that and said, no, we were going to work on that this year. And they said, you have to have that in now, first release, because it's already reality.
Well, from the customer point of view, I mean, what's your conversation with them around cloud and virtualization with regard to PCI? Do they understand, you know, that, I don't know if you've seen Chris Hoff's kind of slide where he's, you know, he draws the lines, he's got the SaaS and the PaaS and the infrastructure, and, you know, above this point of the line, it's your responsibility, down here, it's the provider's responsibility. I mean, customers, are they aware, or are you still in the evangelism stages?
Not so much evangelism anymore. People understand the shared nature of services and have dealt with services, at least from a Salesforce.com perspective in the past, and, you know, many other products that are out there. What you have to take a look at is all those transition points and where the relationship changes. And ultimately, if it all goes wrong and somebody gets hacked, what's the outcome? I mean, do you go out of business? An acceptable use policy is not good enough to protect your company at that point in time. So that's where you have to take a risk-based approach and say, you know, there are certain levels of failure that are expected that, you know, map around that there could be, you know, somebody who gives up one credit card because they chose a bad password, right?
Right.
That might be an acceptable risk, but to have that give up 100,000 credit cards is not.
Right.
And you need to make sure that the service provider's practices don't allow for that. Mm-hmm. And so that's also some guidance that's in the information supplement, is how to maintain multi-tenant administration, you know, how to audit that and make sure that it's sufficient. Because that's the biggest deal.
Just from strictly, aside from PCI, from a virtualization point of view, how are your conversations with customers, what are they coming to you with today that was different a year ago? I mean, in terms of level of understanding, and are they better questions?
Oh, far better questions. Yeah. What they were coming to us with a year ago was primarily server virtualization questions. How do I move these workloads around? How do I do vMotion and vMotion and zenMotion and all the rest of this? And now what they're coming in is they've figured out the server side of things. They're doing more desktop virtualization, and how do I scale the desktops up into the cloud? What security do I need to have on the desktop versus on the server versus in the network? And we're starting to see some of the more progressive ones understand the networking concepts of this so that they can take a workload and define your networking capabilities, your desktop capabilities, your management capabilities, and be able to move that anywhere it's needed and have all of those specific policies persist. So that's huge, and that's part of what we've been doing with the virtual switch integration, some stuff we're doing with OpenStack and OpenFlow, but that's really the next big vector.
Is that the biggest pain point in terms of, is it, you know, the visibility aspect, or is it the persistence of policies? I mean, where are customers struggling most?
It's been both. It's the automation and scalability in total. Yeah. And that can be from a visibility side. You know, you don't have a box you can walk up to anymore and see what's going on. You might not know where this network is. You need to have some way for a human to actually figure out what these relationships are, because they've gotten to be so complex, you can't just throw them on a network diagram on the wall.
Right.
It's not about the wires or even virtual wires anymore. It's about the relationships.
So just to go to back to a compliance question for a second, if by chance your data crosses borders internationally, how are you guys addressing that in PCI and other regulations? I mean, that's going to be a huge concern too. I mean,
it is, and it's that huge concern from a data privacy perspective, looking at EU privacy or some of the specific aspects within France and Germany, for example. It's U.S. Patriot Act, which everybody outside the U.S. is completely freaked out about and does not want their data here whatsoever, for pretty good reasons. And being able to automate that. So within Citrix, we've got capabilities within our NetScaler to have some geolocation, IP-based location, and we can determine where a user is coming from, where a particular workload is, and those capabilities in the industry need to be enhanced even further. Right now, that's more a manual process.
Yeah.
You've heard people talking about bringing up specific data centers in the UK or in EMEA because they need to be able to contain data there, and they'll define the boundaries around it. So it's kind of a pseudo cloud, but it's easier for them to do it that way.
That's an interesting comment you made about the Patriot Act. I don't think I've heard anybody bring that up before. That's a huge concern that they don't want to be subject to it.
U.S. government can come in, take a look at the data anytime they feel the need. We have the same thing with China. It's driving a lot of virtualization decisions as well. People will take mobile devices over there, and any mobile device can be imaged at the border. At China, at Israel, we do it. Rumor has it Canada does it, a couple other countries, and they can force you to unlock your device and copy everything on it. Well, there have been some instances in China and Israel where devices have been imaged, both at the border as well as in hotel rooms. Confidential documents and company plans were on there. What people are doing these days is carrying around a device that doesn't have the data on it, connecting up to it via virtualization. They don't have to worry about border crossings.
And these are just arbitrary decisions to them?
Part of it's arbitrary, but companies are being advised by, there's a travel group that issued an advisory on this 2 years ago, and then the Electronic Frontier Foundation has done this as well, and companies are picking up on it just from an intellectual property loss and liability.
Mobile virtualization, I mean, how far down the road is it? Is this in any kind of implementation right now?
Yeah, very much so. Insurance companies are using phones and iPads for people to connect in, and they realize this is the best way for them to support somebody who's mobile or somebody who's at home. I've walked around this whole week, and this is the only day that I've actually brought the keyboard with me, but I didn't bring a laptop. All I have is my iPhone and this. So yesterday I had to go in and approve an SAP request, and I just connected up, and there I was on SAP, and yeah, it's a small screen. I had to scroll around, but I could do it.
Yeah.
And you can connect up the email. We've got capabilities for that. Any application you need. It allows you to be mobile and not be encumbered by having to constantly worry about where your laptop bag is.
So it really started to hit that tipping point.
It is.
Places.
Yeah, before it was inconvenient because if you couldn't get on a network, you're down and you can't be down. Now you can get on networks just about anywhere, and there's some capacity for offline usage and for some hybrid models as well. Now, the other big challenge, though, now is how do you split this device in half, because this is a personally owned device, so that if the company, if I lose it and they want to wipe the device, they can wipe it and I don't lose my pictures and notes and everything that I have.